You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Up next on The Wire, Tomorrow's World. This week's Tomorrow's World explores a new combination of methodologies that means we can extract DNA from shells. Stella and Isla speak to PhD candidate who leads the study, Kerry Walton from the University of Otago. I will say no more. I'll pass it over to them.
Hi, Earthlings.
Welcome back to another episode of Tomorrow's World,
the segment where we explore science and society.
Now, we're biased to love genetics here as two biology students,
but this week we've got some extra special news on the genetics front. A Kiwi scientist has just come up with a new combination of techniques to extract DNA from shells.
PhD candidate studying at the University of Otago, Kerry Walton, was kind enough to have a chat with us and give us the rundown on his new method.
And it's definitely something to celebrate about.
The method means that previously off-limits samples like shells in museums will now be able to be sequenced.
So let's hear all about it.
So our methods were based on methods that had already been developed previously, particularly in the vertebrate research sphere. So these are the sort of methods that have been applied to sequencing the Neanderthal genome, for example. But one of the key differences between vertebrates and invertebrate shell is that bone, vertebrate bone, is a cellular structure. It contains nuclei which have DNA in them, whereas shells are a secretion which should not contain that DNA material. We've known for about 10 to 15 years that there is DNA in mollusk shell, but there seems to be very little of it. The fact that there are so few studies getting DNA out of shell, and the fact that arguably none of them have really applied those methods to actually answer an evolutionary research question, rather than a proof of concept. Hey, we can kind of do this under certain situations. Possibly should have been an indication for us that it was not as straightforward as we'd hoped. But when we quantified the DNA that we were getting out, we confirmed there was an extraordinarily small amount of DNA in total in the shell, and an extremely small proportion of that, less than 1%, was actually the DNA from the mollusk that produced the shell in the first place. The majority of the DNA is bacteria, or viruses, or human from contamination, or encrusting organisms like sponge, coralline algae, bryozoans that might be on the surface of the shell or boring into it.
And how far back can we go in time before the DNA is too degraded to work with? And what aspects of the DNA are the problem for sequencing when we talk about degraded DNA?
All other things being equal, time does correlate with DNA degradation, but it's not a very good proxy because by far the biggest determining factor are taphonomic. They relate to the preservation conditions of the sample. So you can have better preserved DNA from a cave deposit or permafrost that's tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands years old than a sample that's been in an acidic peat swamp for a couple of hundred years. So age is a factor, but age is usually not the primary factor in determining how well preserved DNA is going to be. So environmental conditions, taphonomy, is the main factor. The theoretical absolute limit for DNA recovery seems to be in the order of 1.5 million years.
So we might now be looking at museum or archived materials and things that we can't have found alive or would have been very difficult to find alive previously. Can we understand things about soft tissue, for example, body plan or metabolic activity, from genomic data alone?
These are one of the reasons that mollusks are a phenomenal group to work on. Mollusks have a few unique advantages over most other animal groups. The majority of them, 80 or 90%, produce a shell that is relatively robust, got a high chance of persisting in the environment for hundreds of years. A very large portion of what we know about the climate and different regions or previous ecosystems is based on the fossil record. And a huge proportion of the fossil record is mollusks. So mollusks are a phenomenal way to understand change through time.
What we like to do on this show is put in this research or the context into a wider picture, especially looking at climate change in the future. There are discussions of affecting shell production because of climate change and ocean conditions. Is this something of concern for your research?
Climate change is going to drastically alter ecosystem composition. It's going to make some species be less well adapted to the environment they're going to find themselves in. It's going to make some environments more vulnerable to invasion or change. So it's going to massively impact almost any conceivable environment, even under somewhat conservative climate predictions. One of the very important things we need to be doing at the moment is understanding the baseline. What was the environment like before? And that way we can actually be more confident that what we're seeing are actual changes rather than short-term trends, or just we're seeing something that's always been true but never been documented before. And that's not an easy thing to do, because it's quite hard to correct for sampling effort. But that's one of the major advantages of having well-maintained and large natural history collections, is that they preserve a temporal record, point locations where you've got samples that we can now sequence the genomes from certain points in time. And that can allow us to detect genetic change, population change, population health, all manner of factors. We're expecting to see a lot of warm water species appearing in New Zealand as marine temperatures are rising. And in the last 4 or 5 years, I've been made aware of, or discovered myself, more new records of what we might think of as subtropical or warm water associated species in northern parts of New Zealand than were collected or recorded in the preceding 3 decades. That's not really enough of a sample size to say with confidence these are changes, and it's very hard for any one species to say, oh, that wasn't here previously. Absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence. But the fact that we're building up those collections and we're building up these observations over time means we now know the species were definitely present from this point. And you can kind of extrapolate based on approximating search effort. Well, only one of these was found in the 2010s, but 50 of them were found in the 2020s, and none of them were found before that. It's probably not been here before that, and it's probably increasing in number. So natural history collections are a very important tool to help us record or quantify change through time. One of the projects we are working on is Pupu Whakarongo Taua. It's a tall snail from the far north of New Zealand. And Ngāti Kuri wanted to, they're working to restore their rohi and protect and promote the wildlife in that area. And one of the very important things you need to do to underpin that sort of work is to know what you're working with. What species have you got? How many species have you got? We're hoping to sequence samples that were prior to Maori arrival, prior to European arrival, and through the last 200 years, and see how the genetic composition of these species has changed. A lot of the diversity will have been lost. These snails are highly vulnerable to deforestation, for one, and to introduced predators, pigs, thrushes, rats. By understanding what happened to them, we can hopefully prevent similar processes, or better, control similar processes happening to other species in that region. And we can hopefully, looking forward, help to restore those populations, make sure that when we're translocating species or populations, we put them back, the right population in that area. The one that's most closely related to it might be better adapted to that area.
Another researcher broadening the scope on what we can know about the world.
That's what we love to see on this show.
Thanks to Kerry for telling us all about it.
Stay critical, Earthlings.
Now try saying sequence seashells on the seashore 7 times fast.
I'll leave that to you.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.